Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and I'm delighted to have Riley Sager back on the podcast to chat about his brand new thriller mystery novel, The Only One Left. This book reads like a Hitchcock film and has so many twists, I nearly got whiplash. I loved it. Riley is always so much fun to talk to and we had such a great time. So without further ado, here's my interview with Riley Sager. Hi, Riley Sager. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I am so good. It's so exciting to have you back on the podcast. This book, man. Oh, my God.
I've been getting that a lot. And it's awesome.
It's great. It's really good.
I mean, you never know when you're writing a book. You don't know if it's working or not. And this one, I was so unsure of things that about 150 pages in, I needed to email it to my agent and my editor. Just be like, I am so in the weeds right now. I don't know what I'm doing. I think this one might suck and I might need like an extra year to finish it or something.
Right,
and
right.
Just help me, please. And I sent it to them. They both immediately read it and went, it's freaking fantastic. Just keep doing what you're doing. And I was like, okay, I'll try. And I just kept plugging away. And by the end of it, I realized, I'm like, oh yeah, this is good. This one's really good.
It is. It is really good. It gave me like very strong Hitchcock vibes while I was reading it. Like I felt like I was watching a Hitchcock movie, which was really cool. I love this one a lot. For the folks who haven't gotten to read it yet, could you give us the little synopsis about The Only One Left?
Yes, it is very, very loosely inspired by Lizzie Borden. I wasn't thinking about Lizzie Borden herself, but thinking about the scenario of like, what if Lizzie Borden lived to a very old age and was in poor health and needed someone to take care of her? Mm-hmm. What would that be like for the nurse? Is she scared? Mm-hmm. Is she suspicious? Does she care? Like, all of this kind of stuff. And so I came up with the idea of this home health aide named Kit, who is sent to care for a woman named Lenora Hope, whom everyone suspects murdered her entire family when she was 17. Mm-hmm. It is now 1983. Lenora is up there in years and she can't walk. She can't talk. All she can do is really use her left hand, which she uses to communicate. And so one night she types to Kit on this typewriter that she uses to communicate, I want to tell you everything. Hmm. And so Kit and Lenora starts helping Lenora type up the story of the night her family was murdered. And boy, there's a lot that happened that night.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of secrets.
Yeah, you are the master of twists. It's incredible. Every time I read one of your books, there will just be multiple points where I'm sitting there with my jaw on the floor. Like, wait, what? And that happened so many times in this book. It was phenomenal. It was so much fun. What a ride.
Thank you. And this is probably my twistiest book.
Oh, yeah.
And at this point, I'm worried that by the end of it, readers are just going to be like, oh my God, enough. Just, I'm exhausted. Just let us have something be what's really happening and not like a twist.
But see, what I love about it, and obviously just for the listeners, there will be no spoilers, I promise. What I love about the format of this book is that every twist that happens, it's not that it's like, oh my God, just kidding, it was this. It's that Kit is trying to solve the mystery and she's just not a detective. So she's just kind of going along and being like, oh, I bet this is what happened. Like, and she's very easily swayed by other people talking about their theories. So she's just like me, because I also am like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm very easily swayed. Oh, you're saying this is what happened? I believe that's what happened.
Yeah, Kit is just trying to her best. She's not a detective.
No.
And I mean, she, you know, there is a detective in the book and she tries to sort of be like, hey, there's stuff going on here. And the detective's like, I don't believe you for reasons, which might be
yeah,
spoilers, but
there are reasons, but
because
yeah.
Kit has her. Yeah, like I knew Lenora was going to be. Lenora is just full of secrets.
Yeah.
She's just this motionless, silent woman in a wheelchair full of secrets. And I just loved that about her because I knew that, like Kit, the readers would be like, she's hiding so much. And I want to know what's going on in there. Like, what's going on in her head right now?
Yeah.
And so when she gives that opportunity to Kit, of course, Kit is going to be like, yes, I want to know what's going on in your head. Type it out for me. I will help you. And what Kit gets is so much more than she bargained for because,
it's vast. It's vast.
Layers upon layers of secrets going on in that house.
Yeah. Well, and I love that Lenora's like, she's not just going to say, this is what happened. End of sentence. She's a writer, or she's an aspiring writer. She always wanted to be a writer. So she's like, no, listen, if I'm going to write this out, I'm going to make it good.
Yes. And part of that was just because it would have been so easy for her to just be to type like, this person did it, or yes, I did it, or and no, she makes Kit work for the information.
Okay.
Just like the reader, and Kit is really like a surrogate for the reader.
Yeah, totally.
Where it's like, okay, you're going to find stuff out, but I'm going to take my time. I'm going to go on a few tangents. I'm really going to make you wait it out before you know what's happening. And then when you know what's happening, then there's like, you know, a twist and then another twist and then a
I
third
was gonna
twist.
Say,
And,
yeah. Even when you know what's happening, do you really know what's happening?
No.
You don't. You don't. Not till the very end. There was a point, and the notes I took while reading this are so funny and like just so unhinged. Lots of caps and exclamation points. And I have a note at one point where I say, oh my God, I'm only at 83%. How is there this much story left? Because I was like, I was reading it and I was like, yeah, we're wrapping up. This makes sense. This is definitely what happened. And I looked down and I was like, how am I only at 83%? Like, this is not how it ends. Oh my God. Like, amazing.
It's funny because that's honestly how I felt when I was writing it. Most of my books, most of my books are about 90,000 to 95,000 words.
Okay.
That's what I was planning for this one. And then I just still had more plot that I needed to wrap up and more things that needed to be resolved. And I just was writing more and more. And my deadline was like really approaching. And I'm like, okay, this is 100,000 words. Okay, we are now at 105,000 words. And I got to the point where like, when is this going to end? Like, when can I stop writing this damn book? Because there was just so much.
Oh man.
I weaved such a tangled web that untangling it took a lot longer than I thought. And it really got to the point where I was enjoying the writing process because it's fun to untangle all this stuff. But it felt like the book that was never going to end. At one point,
man.
I'm like, it'll be like, you know, December 2025, and I will still be writing the ending of this book.
There will be one more twist. No, but it's great, though. And I think as a reader, it didn't get exhausting for me because as Kit is like the surrogate for the reader, like I was right along there with her. And every twist that happened, I was like, oh, actually, yeah, that makes even more sense than the last theory. Oh, I can't believe I didn't see that coming. So like it, you know, even though it is this like very layered, tangled web, like it fits together really perfectly, which was delightful to read. Really, really rewarding to read.
It's really tough to do that. And you don't know if it works.
Yeah.
Really until someone else reads it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's always nerve-wracking when I give it to someone and be like, hi, could you read this please? Or give it to my editor.
Yeah.
And then there's just waiting.
Oh God.
And waiting. And then you're thinking, oh, she hates it. None of these twists work. And then a lot of times you'd be like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then I won't believe her because I'm that self-loathing sometimes where I've major imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And so when my editor and agent people are like, oh my God, this is great. Part of me says, oh, they're just saying this to be nice.
Oh.
When it's not their job to be nice. It's their job to get the best book out of me. And so there's always this moment where I don't quite believe them.
Oh, that's so funny.
And then they have to assure me, like, no, we're serious. This is good. This is publishable.
It's very good. That's incredible. In talking about all of the writing, there, of course, are some incredible characters in this book and dual perspectives. Which was the character that was the most fun to write, or maybe the easiest to write, and which was the hardest to write?
Lenora was both the hardest and the most fun.
Oh, okay.
Because when I got the idea, I knew she was going to be very limited in what she can do. But then that begs the question, how do you make this character who's silent and still compelling?
Interesting, yeah.
And I, because I thought of her, I wanted her to be this way because I wanted her to be a woman where everyone reflects their own fears and suspicions and guilt. So, like, you look at Lenora and she's not doing anything sinister or wrong, but you can look at her and be like, oh, she's just this misunderstood woman who had a bad life. Or you can look at her and think, oh, she's just an evil person who killed her whole family. And so it's, she just really reflects the people around her. And that was very intriguing to me. But again, how do you make what, like, one of the main characters of the book doesn't necessarily do anything? And that's when I got the idea of the typewriter that, like, oh, this is how her personality comes through. Like, when she's typing, it's literally giving her the voice that she doesn't have. And so she comes off as being, she's kind of funny, and she's, but then she also can be sometimes very intimidating and sometimes scary. And it was really fun to bring all of this to life through these literal typewritten chapters.
Yeah, I love her sections. I love her, like the flashbacks, the typewritten stuff is really, really cool. And I love when Kit will be, being her caretaker, and she's again, pitying this poor woman who's like basically been stuck in this room for decades and can't even go outside. And then all of a sudden she'll be like, but she might have murdered her whole family. So like maybe I won't like hold her hand.
Right. And that was just like it came through the writing where I'm like, okay, how is she? Because again, she's the audience, the reader surrogate. And so just like the reader will have a thousand different suspicions and theories about Lenora, so does Kit. And I loved writing the scene where she's holding Lenora's hand and then realizes she used this hand to kill her entire family. And then she drops her hand. And then Lenora looks insulted and hurt, and so then she feels pity, and it's all these,
It's
and
great.
it was hard to write like this woman experiencing all these different emotions at once. Like, she likes Lenora, but she also fears Lenora, and she suspects Lenora, but she pities Lenora, and it's sometimes I just had to like stop and be like, okay, how many emotions is she feeling in a single scene, and how can I get that through? And that scene where she drops the hand like exemplifies that.
Yeah,
And also the
totally.
scene when Lenora types out, like, I can't hurt you, which Kit realizes, like, oh, that's different than saying I won't hurt you, because I can't hurt you implies that she would hurt me if she could. And just little things like that were so much fun to come up with and write.
Oh God, I love Lenora. What a great character. As I said before, like I'm very like Kit. I'm very like susceptible to theories. So I know that I personally, if I was thrown into the middle of a mystery, there's no way I would solve it because I would just be like, yeah, I believe whatever this person is saying. And oh, that person's saying something different. Sure, that's the truth. Like, I have no idea. I'm curious how you feel if you found yourself in the middle of this crazy mystery. Do you think you'd be able to solve it? How are your detective skills?
They are so bad. Like, my detective skills are just really, really terrible. I think if I was in this situation, I don't know. I think I would probably leave the situation. And that's one of the hard parts about coming up with like the books that I write. Most normal people would just assess the situation and go, no, I'm out. And they would just go. And so you have to come up with these ways in which the character stays in the situation. And so for Kit, it's just financial desperation. And that's like that's a fallback of mine because I did it in Lock Every Door too, where it's like the only way someone's going to stay in this situation is if they desperately need money. And so it is trying to come up with these different ways in which normal people, it wouldn't make sense to stay there, but for this particular character, it has to psychologically make sense why they remain in the situation.
Yeah, no,
And then once
totally.
Kit gets involved,
Well,
once she gets
damn.
a little first taste of information, she needs more.
She's like, she gets a taste and she's like, well, but maybe everyone has this wrong and I can be the one to set the record straight.
Yeah, and
It's like,
I think at one
ooh.
point she does, she is like, yeah, I should probably get the hell out of here, but I need to know the truth.
Which again, relatable. I don't know that I would leave necessarily because I'd be curious, but I would not be the one to solve it. It would take someone literally sitting me down and being like, I'm confessing everything to you. I'm just gonna tell, like, that's what it would take. And I'd be like, oh, wow. Which makes me a great like mystery thriller reader because I never guess the ending.
Yeah,
I'm
I
always
never
shocked.
guess. I never even try. Like I'm not one of those readers who is like trying to figure it out. I'm here for the ride.
I'm here for the ride. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah, no, it's all just fun. It's just a roller coaster. Let's go. No, I love that. I was reading, so in my I have so many copies of this book. I have the finished copy, I have the ARC, I have the audiobook. But the my ARC came with a little letter that you wrote, and it looks like on a typewriter, which is very cool. And you mentioned that it's for the past 6 summers that, you know, indie booksellers have been hand-selling the crap out of your books. And that was such a mind blow to me because I feel like I've been reading you forever. Has it been 6 years? Have you dropped a book every year for the past 6 years?
Since 2017, there's been a book every summer,
That's
and
wild.
it feels so like you say it feels like forever. It feels like yesterday. Like
Wow.
I'm working on book number eight, and when I stop and think about that, it just is so mind-blowing. And I'm like, I'm writing my eighth book as Riley Sager. Like, how is that possible?
That's
Like, it
crazy.
literally yesterday, Final Girls was coming out, right? It's
I
so,
mean,
and I
I,
know
yeah.
the pandemic has something because that messed up
Oh, sure,
all of
yeah.
our, but even beyond that, like I still think I'd be like, really? How am
Time
I
is so
on
weird.
this book? Time is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I still have my ARC of Final Girls downstairs on my bookshelf. So like I have been reading it forever. But wow, that is, yeah, I saw that and I was like, wait a minute. I was like, that's amazing. So
Yeah, I had to check that math too when I was writing that. I was like,
yeah.
let's stop and make sure that this is right. And then I was like,
That's
oh God, it's right.
incredible.
So weird.
That's quite the pace that you've set for yourself. So, you know, good luck with that.
And it's continuing for at least two more books. So yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. I am deeply looking forward to that. I am very much looking forward to hand selling this one because, oh my God, it's good. And that cover,
The
you always
cover.
have a good cover.
They outdid the like Penguin
Oh,
Random House art department. They are geniuses.
it's
This time
gorgeous.
they just went all out. Like I saw the
Oh, yeah.
cover and like my heart just grew like a thousand sizes because it's so good. It's so
Yeah.
gorgeous and evocative. And the best
It's
part,
beautiful.
yeah, it looks like a paperback from 1983.
It does. Yeah, it totally does. I love it. I love it so much. Oh my gosh, Riley, I could probably keep you here all day, but I know you're on your press tour day. So I will let you go, but I do want to just say congratulations on this one. It's another, you hit it out of the park again. I love it so much. And thank you so much for being on the podcast again.
Thank you so much. And I'm so thrilled you loved it. Cause yeah, I love it too. And I think lots of people are gonna love this one, which is exciting.
Awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Huge thanks again to Riley Sager for joining me on the podcast. The Only One Left is available now from Gibson's Bookstore. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and all of those links will be in the show notes along with this episode's shoppable list, which you can also find at gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye!